I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Back to Better Book Club. And I have my friend Bailey here today. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, my name is Bailey Rammel. What would you like me to share?
First we'll say that we met in college and we'll probably get to some questions there. Or, you know, we'll probably share some stories of what we thought was like there. But how about you tell us what you do as a career, because today's episode is I Know How She Does It, How Successful Women Make the Most of Their Time. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your career and your family life? Because the whole reason I chose you is because, at least outwardly and inwardly, because I know you as a person and I've known you, like, even if you don't feel like you have it together, I admire you as someone who's successful in both their career and personal life and juggling it. I'm not going to say balancing because nobody's balancing, but juggling it, at least outwardly.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah. So my name is Bailey. I live in South Dakota and I was born and raised here. I am currently, my title is Senior Learning Consultant, which is basically a fancy title for just helping people figure things out. I get to work for a company called Viveic. We are a completely remote team, and we have been a completely remote team since the beginning. They were started in about 2006, I believe. And so that was a pretty progressive thing for that time. Now there's about 50 of us spread out across the country and even in southern France. Yeah, we are a company that designs learning solutions. And I've been working here for about 6 years. Prior to that, I was a psychology instructor at our local community college for about 4 years. And I also did some counseling because that's what my degree is in school counseling. So yeah, that's the background that I bring. And my family, I have my husband, I live here on my ranch with him, Grant, and we have 3 small children. Our boys will turn 3 in November, or sorry, they're going to turn 4 in November.
4, because they're Davy's age. Yeah. Or they're older than Davy. Yeah.
Yes. And then our daughter is 6 and she just started kindergarten. So yeah, we've got a really fun house right now. The kids they're just at that age where they're hilarious as they are coming into their little personalities. So
it's fun. Yeah. Super fun. So your work schedule, so you work remotely, and then what is like your travel day to day look like? What is that? Or I shouldn't even say day to day, week to week, month to month. How often are you traveling and working from home?
Yeah. So if I'm not traveling, I have the luxury of working from home. This is my home office right here. We live in the original farmhouse at the place. And so it's a small kind of like built together. My office, my headquarters that I like to tease people is actually in a closet. So I built an office into a closet, space saving things, you know. So when I'm not here and I'm on the road, I'm kind of all over the place. I have a loop that goes like Sacramento, Austin, DC area. So I'm usually kind of on the coast, but our team meets quarterly in a different location each time, which will take us kind of all over the country. And then just depending on, where my clients are, it's pretty much all air travel. I do have some local South Dakota clients, but it's pretty much all air travel. I try to keep it to once a month at this point with all of the littles. My husband is a rancher, and so it's a lot of pressure on our childcare providers, which right now the primaries are grandmas. Blessed that they are both retired and capable. And we are so lucky in that sense that we have them so near and available and able to help us. And that's really what makes this lifestyle possible for both Grant and I. Yeah. But yeah, try to keep it to once a month. So it's about 1 week a month. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less.
Are you usually gone the whole week?
I try, it depends. I'll try to keep it as short as I can, typically. Sometimes I'm flying in the same day as a meeting. Sometimes it's a lot of negotiating with the clients based on what's going on. So sometimes, let's say there's a meeting on Thursday that runs from 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock. But if we're going to be in Denver, I know there's a flight that I can get out of Denver at 4 o'clock on. And so I might negotiate to have that meeting start at 8 and end at 3 so that I can hop on and still get home. I might not get to put my kids to bed, but the next morning, I'm still going to get to see them and do morning routine with them. So no, it's not always a week long. It really varies, but it kind of depends on how far away the destination is and how many connections there are.
Okay. So the book, and everyone who's listening to this podcast episode, we've said that this is the second episode that's coming out. We're doing 2 episodes a month. So the goal is that everyone who's listening to this episode has already read the book, because otherwise if we go through and rehash out the book, like, what's the point? Like, we're not gonna be able to say it better than the author. So one of the things that I really wanted to ask you about was exactly like how you make your schedule when you're away and that type of thing. And, you know, just ways that you decide, okay, yep, I'm gonna try to be home at this time, or how can I squeeze in some of this time while I'm gone, or how can I work this way? Or I don't know. I thought that was really interesting. And then when I first asked you to come on and told you about the book, I just laughed because you're like, well, I already tracked my time down to the 15 minute. I'm like, oh, well, okay then. So let's talk about your time mosaic. What were you doing the week that you tracked your time?
Oh gosh. Okay. So I just did my time mosaic in the last week. So when I say that I already track my time, to be fair, I'm tracking my time for work.
Exactly.
Yep. And that's what I've done the last 6 years. We use a system for project management that also helps us. So my job specifically is I've moved from project management into more of the sales side of things. We call it our opportunity management. And so it's my job as a consultant to design the solutions that we're putting in front of our clients. And I do that by looking at a lot of the data that we have from similar solution designs that we have and kind of analyzing that data and putting that all together. So it's really important in this project management system that we have accurate data about what's happening, right? So to be fair, I track my time for work very closely, as all of us at the company that I work for do. But that being said, this was a fun exercise because I don't always keep track of what's happening in my personal life and how I'm. So
when I first read this book, it was 2018 when I was still in grad school, and I started kind of tracking my time as I was trying to decide what specialty to go into as a nurse practitioner. And then realizing that, okay, if I specialize in something that assists the physician, you know, as a nurse practitioner, I'm going to have zero control over my schedule. And so that's what really got me thinking, okay, I'm going to go into family medicine. And so I would say, I'd like to say every 6 months I do this, but I'd say it's more than once a year. So it's more frequently than every 12 months, maybe every 10 months on average. I've done this for the last 6 years. All of a sudden I'm like, when I start getting those absolutes in my mind, like I never see my kids, I never see my friends, I'm not working enough, I'm not doing this. I'm like, no, that book says that those things really aren't true. Like when you start tracking your time, you have more time than you think. You're doing things more than you think. Were there any spots that really surprised you?
Let's take a look, take a little gander at it. I think.
Did you see Grant very often? Did you? Yes,
well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, you know, my husband is in his slow time of the year right now, and that still means that he's working about 70 hours a week.
Yeah.
So, and the only reason
and his 70 hours is actually 70 hours when she's like, most people over exaggerated. I'm like, yeah, but like, I grew up on a ranch. Like,
right. And the only reason I know that, I don't know that a rancher has probably ever tried to calculate how many hours a week that they work. But the only reason I know that is because it's so important for me to track time that I was like transferring that to him, thinking about like when I look at mine and how realistic it is, it's like wild to think about the hours that they're working. So, I mean, because he can range anywhere from 70 to 96. So there, I am actually very impressed with, I don't know exactly what the hour, I should have calculated the hours before we got onto this call about, I was listening to the debrief that you did with Abby.
Yeah.
And I have calculated how many hours I slept and how many I worked. So then that's how many I had free, but
nope.
I didn't calculate specifically how many I spent with the kids or how many I spent with Grant, but I did get to see Grant a few times.
Yeah. Was awesome. Yeah. No. And that's exactly, you know, I'm like, oh, are we just like ships passing in the night? And here you sometimes take the shift, you put them to bed, and that's okay. But honestly, when you think about, you know, what is left, what reasonably can, well, your kids can't put themselves to bed. Like if right. you don't put them to bed, nobody's going to, and right. you have to work and you have to, you know, so it's like, you know, obviously the first thing that goes is our personal, you know, whether we exercise or whether we read a book or what we do for fun. And then probably our time with our spouse or our time with our friends or our time, because that is where we can take away right away, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But this is the good news. I did actually get to spend a lot of time with Grant this weekend at the expense of my kids, though. We went to a college friend's wedding and we got to stay in an Airbnb with college friends. And let me tell you, it was a really fulfilling weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Now it's September, but I'm like, I had one of those in June. Like, I just did that last June. Yeah. But it's still, it just, those things can refill my cup for a good long while. So I want to know what your thought was on the author's perspective on regarding women having it all and having a career and having kids and having, you know, her definition. And do you feel like, before I told you that you were successful, do you feel like you consider yourself a successful person? Like, what is your definition of success?
That is such a good question, Liz. I think that I have been thinking about this a lot, probably the last 5 years. I had this interaction that just really stopped me in my tracks and made me think, wow, it was actually more of a slap in the face that made me really step back and take a look at what does success look like? What does happiness look like? I think that this term of you can have it all, it disappoints me a little bit mm-hmm. because it makes us think that we should be striving for more, maybe. Like that there's like all is this vague term that I don't have it all already. And I think the reality is that we do have it all already. I mean, we do. Truly, like we are whole in our complete being. And I have come to realize that I can define my worth by my productivity. And that in itself can be a huge disappointment because life is so unpredictable. And I mean, Liz, you know this through and through, right? You've gone through the grief process, which is highly unpredictable. Mm. So I think that when I read this book, as I was trying to conceptualize it, yeah, I would never agree that Laura's definition of success is, and having it all is fair for, if it, maybe for us, a unicorn fraction of mm-hmm. the population, because we're talking about women that make very good money. They have an incredibly flexible lifestyle, even for when this was written in 2015.
I know. I'm like, who is this person?
Yeah.
And I see her point. Like she's trying to describe the unicorn, right? Like she, that is
right.
In her defense.
Well, the big message I think to take from this book is, it's important to step back and observe.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to step back and take a look at where am I spending my time? And you don't take a look at it in the sense that you're judging it good or bad. You're observing it. And mm-hmm. the unexamined life is not a life worth living, right? That's yep. what science tells us. And so she's saying, take some time and look at where you're investing your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see that picture, you can realize, is this what I want? Is this getting me to where I want to be? Mm-hmm. And if it is, then that's awesome, right? Because we already talked about this wholeness. Like, we are completely whole already in the things that we're doing. We are already enough in the things that we're doing. But a lot of us do have this like deep soul craving that we can't quite pinpoint. We know there's something nudging us. And so it's activities like this that make us kind of zoom out and look at a bigger picture that can really help you kind of step into that next phase of what is it that I want to make my life look like?
Mm-hmm. I think what I loved about this and why I wanted to start this book club and why I wanted to just, I have been on this kind of mission. I don't know what the word is. I haven't figured out what the title is. But I would say in the last 2 years, especially since Josh died, when I started sharing more about my grief journey, even, you know, on social media or just speaking a little bit, and I would get so many people that came up to me and they're just surprised because they've never heard people talk about it so openly before. They're mm-hmm. like, I had no idea. And I started looking at everything in terms of transparency. And I've always been a trusting person of so many people, and I'm chatty and I'm a verbal processor, and I give my whole heart to people. And I'm not dumb. Like, I know I've been made fun of for it, or in a way, like, oh my gosh, Liz is an oversharer, or she's this, or she's that. And I always was like, okay, that's a me problem. I need to fix that. I need to work on that. And then it's like, you know what? That's me. That's how I learn. And I feel this huge need for transparency. And when I hear her talking about her mosaic schedule, and then when Abby and I recorded ours and we shared it, and now, you know, I put my entire week out for a podcast to see, because how do you know if you don't realize that, you know, you assume everybody's going on 3 dates a week with their husband and doing this and doing that. Right. Nobody right. is. And even in the last couple of years, when I, you know, built my house or just weird day-to-day life things that people don't talk about because it's private and you don't share those things. And I'm like, hey, what brand are your floors? I really like these. And someone will be like, well, they don't want to tell me because then I'll Google it and find out how much it costs. I'm like, just tell me where you got your freaking flooring from. I just want to know what company this is. Like, yes. I don't care how much it costs, but people are so
like over here doing a reverse Google search. Yeah, like, and, don't mind me taking a picture.
Yeah, exactly. But like, and people, I get that people are private and not everyone is as outward as me, but I found that, you know, even since sharing on my other podcast, Flower Farmer Forum, you know, how did I get into this? How did I do this? What kind of insurance do you need? Here, I'll tell you what I did. And just that transparency has brought me a lot of abundance in the last couple of years, in a lot of opportunities for things that I had no idea this could even be a job or a career or whatever. And I don't know. I think it's so interesting if we can just know how other people are doing it, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What would you say? Did you, when she talked about like the golden hours and maximizing that, what are your golden hours? Do you work morning, evening, afternoon, weekends, beginning of the week?
Yeah. So if we're talking golden hours for like focused work productivity, we're talking early morning hours. Yes. I'm a morning person through and through. I get my best work done for Vivaic between 8 to 10 a.m., I would say. And I'm really lucky in that Grant is a really involved parent. I just spoke about how busy he is, but he also is like, when he's here with the family, that man is on, and he takes the kids to school and to daycare every morning. And so once we get the kids out of the house around 7:45, that's my buckle down time. Like, sometimes I won't even take time to get out of my pajamas or brush my teeth before I just dive in, because I know that's when my brain's fresh and it's ready to go and I can just do some really focused work. So unfortunately, then we get to noon and I'm like, holy cow, I need to come up for air. And then I have a meeting that's on camera and I'm actually still in my pajamas, which yeah. can be an issue. But I mean, that's the beauty of, again, like I'm kind of in a unicorn situation where I do get to work fully remote and have flexibility. And yeah, I don't want to assume that that can, there's a lot of people that they have schedules that doesn't allow for.
Yeah. And I think that as a, so I don't know if I told you this, but I just hired my first like non-farm employee. So she's, we're calling her my administrative assistant for now. And we're kind of like project management and we're still really defining her role, but it's been going so great. And her name's Tina, but we're trying to figure out what our schedule is like. And thankfully she's been very flexible. And I'm just trying to learn her personality and the ways that she works, because ultimately I do need someone that's going to work around my schedule for now, because I'm, you know, trying to get out of being a solopreneur with, you know, the podcast piece and a lot of that stuff. But at the same time, trying to be really, really respectful of, hey, what are your most productive hours? Or how do you, need to do this? Or coming up for air, what do you need? And, you know, we were talking about break time or whatever. And I'm like, I will never question it if you just all of a sudden like stand up and just like walk to the end of the driveway and back, like go for a walk, because, or, you know, and just trying to learn what some people might need. And I feel like how I did not thrive as working as a bedside nurse for 12-hour shifts, especially if I was, say, in the ICU. You know, at the beginning of your shifts, you had your buddy and you had to say what time you were going to go for lunch. And that was because you had to be with the patient within arm's reach because they're on a ventilator and all these things. And it's like, I don't know when I'm going to need a break mentally 7 hours from now, but I have to predict it. And now that I'm able to set those schedules myself, or when I was a nurse practitioner in the clinic, I mean, you had patients all day and scheduled meetings. And now it's like, okay, can I do my creative stuff in the morning and then schedule interviews in the afternoon, or meet with brides because we do a lot of wedding florals now? Or, you know, so I try to really stack meetings in the afternoon, and I try to do very few meetings in the morning because that's just not when my brain works.
Yeah. It is. No, I would agree. It's totally different, that the rigidity of the schedule. And then, and like you shared, you don't know when you're going to have that patient come through, that it's just, it can be almost traumatizing in itself, whether it's triggering for you personally, whatever they're going through, or like that. I mean, yeah, that's, and that's why there is such high burnout in professions, right? Because dealing with the rigidity of that, and there's not a solution to that, because we need those services as a workforce, right? Like there's not an easy way to get around that, but you're right. Like, we are in a situation now where raising a young family and being able to really think about how, not even how we structure our days, but how we structure our weeks to best fit the needs of our family and best fit the needs of what our body needs in that moment. Like, I mean, that has been a huge blessing for me.
So let's go back to when we talked about like being the default parent, the one with the flexible schedule, because you work from home and, you know, well, okay, you can rearrange a meeting or when you're home. Obviously, when you're traveling, you can't. But, you know, I definitely feel that. And that was honestly why I left my career working in the clinic as a nurse practitioner. When there was a snow day, when there was 1 week where we had two hour late starts and one blizzard day for Vidalia when she was in preschool, which she didn't have daycare. She was just in full-time preschool. And so I just had to, like, I couldn't go to work for 3 days in a row. And I had patients that they had physicals scheduled with me for an entire year. People that took a PTO day a year ago, and I had to move them around. And I'm like, well, my next available is in 4 weeks. Sorry. Like, I literally can't squeeze you in, because I was working 3 days a week at the time. And now all of a sudden I have 40 patients that need to squeeze in the next few weeks. And so that's where I just kind of dove into this life of like owning a business and entrepreneurship. And that comes with its own problems. And as I'm growing, I'm able to do more working on the business than in the business. But yeah, just like being the default parent, like what does that mean to you?
Yeah. I think to me, being the default parent was a decision that I unconsciously made even before I had kids, like probably even before I got married, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in a ranching family, and I watched the hours that my dad worked, and I loved growing up in that lifestyle. And I knew that if I had children, I wanted to raise my children in the same lifestyle. And so I love to think that I went into this with eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is you just can't know until you're in it, mm-hmm. what it's like. Right. And so I did decide to become a school counselor so that I could have my summers off. I wanted to be in the show barn with my kids, and I wanted to, you know, have that life with them. And then when I went to work for Vivaic, and it's a full year contract, right? It's all year round. It's mm-hmm. not, I don't have summers off anymore. And I also travel a lot, and I'm inaccessible. I am thousands of miles away and sometimes. And so there are times that I'm not the default parent, but in the moments that I am home and I'm working, I very much am the default parent mm-hmm. because of the nature of Grant's work. It's just sometimes really dangerous for him to have children, and it's harder for him to just drop everything. If I'm in the house, I already have quick access to a car to get to town if one of my kids is throwing up, right? And so
and they can lay in bed in the next room, or they can lay on the couch while you're working, you know. Exactly. They can't lay on the four-wheeler or in the truck, or you know, he can't bring them to work. You can yeah. bring them to work because your work is your home, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah. So I think, there's two parts of this. Like, one, when I made the decision to work for Vivaic, it really kind of flipped Grant and I's whole vision for what our lives would look like upside down, because all of a sudden I was in airports and I was gone and I was working full time. And like, he was like, wait, I thought you were going to run the show barn. Like, what's
going on? Have the summers off. And
yes. Yeah. And he was like, where did all of my help go? Like, this was not the agreement. And so, and we had growing pains through that. We really did. And it was a lot of processing and a lot of like me having to think about, you know, what is it that I want? And what is it that's really important to me that fulfills me professionally? And then bringing Grant along with that, right? Because previous to this, I had given him one narrative about what I wanted. And then overnight, I essentially changed my mind. Like, I literally got a call from Vivaic, and the next week I was flying out to Portland, and he was just like, what? We had a 6-month old at home, and it was pretty ground shaking for us. So in my mind, I was like, I will have so much flexibility though too, because I'm going to be working from home. I won't be in a classroom where I have to.
And this is pre-COVID, a couple years pre-COVID. So like, I'm going to work from home.
Yes. Yes, it was this like, it was a really novel concept, to be honest. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I really saw myself in having flexibility to be this default parent and still kind of hold true to that promise that I had made to our marriage and mm-hmm. having children, right? And the other side of that is I could have never prepared for how taxing it is and how easy it is to like start doing this comparison game of like, who does more for the kids? You start being like, well, I did this last time, so it's your turn to do this. And uh-huh. it's just the most bizarre conversation. I was listening to a podcast. Michelle Obama was talking about like, well, we go through seasons of life where sometimes it's your season. She had a concept that she called it. And she was talking about how it was so easy to be resentful of President Obama when he was campaigning and when he was in office, because she was the default parent. She was doing everything. And she's like, but now we're in this beautiful part of life where I get to soar and chase my own ambitions. And he's mm-hmm. the default parent, and he's taking care of the things with the kids. And
yeah.
I thought it was interesting, because I'm like, well, that might be true for her, because she has she married the president who now is retired.
But yeah. like he can't work. What else is he gonna do for a job? Like, he can't yeah, get a job.
Exactly. And so like, there's that's the thing, like there's all this advice out there that's like, there will be, your time will come, and like, just, you know, like, in yeah, sorry, I'm rambling now, but no, I think that it's important to be proactive over designing the life that you want. And I think that Laura's concept of looking at your mosaic can be a really good first step. It's not the complete picture because there is a lot of soul level deep work that needs to go into, okay, now I can see the picture of what I'm mindlessly doing every week. What do I actually want to be doing? What is really the things that are
and maybe what you're doing is what you want to be doing. Maybe you're like, you know what? I want to watch Netflix every night. It makes me okay. Like, no one's saying that you can't. It's just to live this like, I don't get to do this because of this. Well,
like, we are not a victim. We are not a victim.
And I think that, so the other thing that we had talked about, or, you know, when we had our little pre-call, was transitioning into, you know, looking at, you know, when she has her chapter about part-time versus full-time or what that ends up looking like. And I think that, you know, it all kind of depends on, I guess what I liked about it is the way she put it gave me a second way of looking at it. In 2018, when I was in grad school, I had a one-year-old when I first read this book. And for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, I definitely, you know, I had never looked at it as like, well, if I work more hours, then I can afford to hire someone to clean my house or do those duties or do those things. Versus, okay, if I work part-time, now I'd have a really hard time justifying like what that looks like. And like, oh, well, I work part-time. I cannot, you know, if I work part-time and I have someone cleaning my house, like I can't do that. Like, I just can't, you know? And so it's like that guilt or that perception of like, A, nobody needs to know, but it actually feels really riveting to be 35 years old and like, yeah, I own it. Yeah. Someone cleans my house. Who the frick else is going to do it? I ain't going to do it. I don't have time. Like, or I do, but then I don't have time to do this and I don't feel bad about it. Yeah. So I think that's what's fun about like being in your 30s and honestly having been widowed and not give a crap of what people think. Like, I can just like, meh. Yeah, no. So like, I'm not embarrassed to tell someone that someone cleans my house. Who do you think does it? I don't. Like, when I first read that in my 20s, I'm like, well, what type of person can afford that? Or what type of person, what do you mean you don't have time? And it's like, it's not that I don't have time. It's not that my plate is so full. It's that it's as full as I want it.
Yeah. It's really about the social constructs that, you know, we have these things conditioned into us as to like, you know, we've heard the comments and heard the things. And I think that we internalize those more than we realize. And there is anything that you could dream up is honestly possible. Like anything that you could dream up, it exists somewhere in infinite reality. And it's just finding a way to construct that for yourself. And I, by no means like, wow, I'm listening to myself in a very privileged position, right? Like, I do not want to discredit the oppression that like, that I sound super tone deaf right now to a lot of audiences. And so I do want to recognize the privilege that I've had my whole life. And I'm very fortunate for that. But it's taking the time to step back and look at what could be a reality for you versus complaining about what we don't have and looking at the deficits, I think is really the sweet spot of opening your mind up in the ways that you can with self-development.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like, when I first went to school for nursing, it was entirely, well, nurses make good money. They can, you know, work a bunch of hours, a bunch of overtime. There's always going to be money. There's always going to be shifts. Like, there's always going to, it seemed like a very stable career choice. And, you know, to say that, you know, if I had done something else and like my path just kind of, I feel like I worked hard. I feel like I, you know, made sacrifices, but at the same time, we had a lot of fun along the way. And I do have to share, and I do want this to be on the record for my listeners, because I like to try to humanize myself a little bit. Tina, my assistant, was like, and how do you know Bailey? And I'm like, well, we were friends in college. And then I told her the story about Johnny Holm and getting out of a minor. And anyway, so that was fun. So I was escaping it. We weren't there. We weren't there. So another thing that I thought was really interesting as a business owner was when, you know, Laura talks about, you know, having this flexibility over your schedule and trying to, you know, set things a certain way. For me as a business owner, I look at that and I start listening to, okay, that sounds like a freelancer, or that sounds like subcontracted work. Like, as long as the goals are met and you have the flexibility to do it when you want, whether it's, and you have location freedom, like, can I do this from home? Can I do this? You know, can I work in the morning instead of in the evening? Or can I work at night? Or can I work, put in some hours on the weekend? And quickly that's becoming, that's a 1099 position compared to a W-2, where you are expected to clock in and out and have a set amount of time. And I'm really curious, and I don't have the type of business that I have, probably is never going to turn into that. But at the same time, it's just really interesting as, you know, younger generations start not demanding, but asking for all of this extra flexibility, what the implications and consequences could come from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful question. There's so many businesses talking about this right now. And I mean, this is a hot topic of in the future of work. I was in a Forbes conference last Thursday that was talking about the future of work. And I mean, the hybrid work, the remote work, it's everything that companies are trying to figure out right now. It's especially the companies that went into COVID without really any vision for what it would look like to, so we go remote as a company, but then they didn't really have a vision for, but everybody needs to come back once COVID is over. It was the ones that were a little wishy-washy about it that are really struggling right now because they're getting a lot of pushback from their employees. But there's also just a lot of pushback on this 9-to-5 concept from the next generation and even our generation, the millennial generation.
Well, right? Listening to Laura's book, I'm like, how does anyone work 9-to-5? Like, right. You can fit it in and you can, like, I want the flexibility to go for a run over my lunch break. And I want the flexibility to, you know, just finish my charts in the evening or, you know, but not everyone has that type of job. Very few. And I think that's her point is, the more successful you get in your career, the more, you know, you have the power to make those decisions. But I don't know, but maybe it's just, okay, then choose that job that works those shifts that align with your hours or this.
Yeah, but I think that we're going to see companies transitioning and try to solve for that. They're going to have to.
There will be a solution. I'm excited.
Yeah, there will be. Yeah. And what we know it isn't right now is because, you know, we've talked a little bit about salaried positions versus a 1099 position. So in a salaried position, you can assume that you're not going to be tracking time. When we do use project management systems that track time, a lot of times what can happen is the more you work, the more you work. Mm-hmm. So I'm really efficient in a task and I get it done, but I also know that I'm contracted. In order to receive benefits from this company, I'm contracted to work 40 hours a week. And so let's say I get this proposal done and it was supposed to take me 8 hours. That's how much time I had this week. I got it done in 5. That doesn't mean that I get 3 hours back in my week to go do something. No, that means I need to go get busy
with more work,
the things mm-hmm. that I need to do. Cause I have a contractual obligation with my company, right, to as a full-time employee to do these things. And so, and I do think that that's unfortunately one of the flaws that it's a quick fix solution that we have to remote work. Cause we have to be held accountable and we have to have that data. Like I said, when I am doing solution design on the front end of projects, I need to know how long it takes so that I can do analysis on that data and I can see mm-hmm. how and accurately represent that in the form of a budget estimate for my clients. And so it's really, really important data to have. And yeah, these are going to be the conversations that businesses are having is how do we help our employees be accountable and hopefully feel very fulfilled in those tasks that they're completing for us, those projects that they're completing for us. But then how do we also make sure our captured revenue is lining up based on what we're putting out into the world.
Okay, one final question that really wasn't in the book, but it's been something that Nikki and I talk about all the time. So Nikki is my best friend from college. Bailey is really good friends with her too. But we always talk about the difference between success and significance because Nikki and I are both widowed and we're both like, well, what's the definition of success? What's the goal here? We're talking about it in terms of like our family and our friends and our careers and our jobs and whatever. And we're like, but what's significance? Like what impact, like we talk about the impact we want to have on the world because Jeff and Josh are not here. And like, What kind of significance am I going to have on this ripple effect? And maybe it's the fact that I've never really cared about what people think. And then now, especially since Josh died, like I really don't care. So now I'm just having podcasts and having awkward conversations and people messaging me all the time saying, oh, you said what I was thinking. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I don't care about consequence. And I'm my own boss now, so I can say what I want. Like,
yeah.
So let's talk about success versus significance and like what that means to you. And if that drives you a little bit, like thinking about her definition of success with this book, but let's go farther. Like, I think when you move past success and you're striving for a life of significance, like what that means.
Yeah. I have really had to challenge my definitions of success over the last several years. Previously, success was really defined by the things that Laura is defining as success in her book. And what I've come to realize is that you can have those things on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You can have all of them, and there might not be that much significance in them, and they might not be that fulfilling. And so for me, it's transforming back to that conversation about what are the things that help me understand my wholeness already? What are the things that help me understand that I am successful just by existing?
Mm-hmm.
I am successful just because I get to be in this human experience at this point in time on planet Earth. Like, as woo-woo as that sounds, it's so, the world needs all of us in this moment, right? And so how can I look in the moment, the only moment that we have is right now. We're constantly, you and I are like this. We look at the future. We look at the past. We base our decisions on all of these things. And the reality is that the only moment we have is right now, right? This is the only time that we have. And so what am I doing right now in this moment to make it something that is fulfilling and something that is authentically me? And if I can go through my day feeling like I am authentically me, at the end of the day, I am going to have a lot more energy than on the days that I am busting through my mosaic tiles, thinking I'm being productive as heck, and there was nothing on that mosaic that was actually fulfilling and in the moment. And so I should have sent you my mosaic, but they're the carving out time for meditation, specifically before like really challenging client calls or really challenging conversations is very important for me, because that's something that it can ground me. I'm a Pisces, so I'm flying off into the skies all the time. I got to go put my feet on the ground so that I can remember to stay here. If I don't, I'm in the clouds, but remembering to ground myself and be right here is starting to be how I can define success. Because if I can feel myself in my body right here, I can start to understand what I'm truly experiencing. Significance has been really hard for me to wrestle with as well, because what I've come to understand over the course of the last 5 years is, again, same as success. The things that I thought were significant in my life were a lot of things that I was conditioned to think were significant. And then when I actually experience them, maybe that's not the experience that I have. And so that's part of the questions that I think are important to ask. And it's not like I feel like there's this profound answer out there that's just going to show up and it's going to be my significance. Truth is that it's evolving and it's changing. And again, back to the beginning, like a life unexamined is not a life worth living. Like, this is the whole point of thinking about these things. What if you could sit down and get really still with yourself and try to block out the chaos of the demands of what's in your inbox and what you heard, what you saw when I was scrolling through TikTok and I saw this really cute mommy influencer and all the things she was able to do with her kids. If I can block all of that noise out, what are the things that are truly bringing me significance to my core? And then how do I start putting the puzzle pieces together to build that puzzle?
What I did for my schedule, and this is what I want you to do and send it to me at some point, is I color coded everything. So like sleep was blue and then time with my kids was green and time was here. And I realized that there were some big chunks of certain colors. But if I didn't do that, then I wouldn't have a big chunk of this time with my kids, with my husband, with my, you know, like, or honestly with work. Like I love what I'm doing and what I'm building, but I'm happiest when it's doing well and when it's successful. So when I have, I mean, if I have too much time with my family, then I'm not enjoying work because now I'm not meeting my business goals. And so it's, you know, it's not about like having these perfect things, but to me, it's like, how can I shift these to make room for this? Because I don't want little chunks of these things. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm an abundance person. I always have been. Like, I want this. And
I know. And I think I like that saying better, more than you can have it all versus having it all. I think I like the saying you can have your cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's exactly, the English language doesn't really have it. I don't feel like if I find it, I'll share it, but I feel like that's a little bit better of a description.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bailey, thank you so, so much for coming and sharing your insights. And I love the fact that, you know, these conversations are happening. I love the fact that hopefully someone will listen to it. And honestly, I'm sure there are a lot of people that are going to not do what I say, and they're not going to read the book first, and they're going to listen and be like, oh, well, what did that quite mean? Because they need to be prodded a little bit, or they need to be, you know, these, you know, and that's okay. And that's where I think like, we meet everyone where we are. And I love the fact that, you know, you and I can go a long time without talking, but yet I know that if something is misaligned, or if, you know, I'm so appreciative to have those friends in my life that, you know, if in 5 years I get way off track, like you are someone who's going to bring me back. You are someone who's going to remind me that like, Liz, no, this is, you know, like, this is just the example that you set, like those people that you surround yourself with. And it's not about that you're better than someone, or that you're different with someone, or that, you know, these goals, but it's people that are going to continuously strive to keep working toward what the end goal is, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you are so perfectly you. Aww.
We're just having a moment. I just love you. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, I would love to hear what you guys think about the book. So this is the first book of the month. Next month will come out. Head to the episode notes if you haven't officially joined the book club. But next month's book is actually called Juggling Elephants. And I was able to interview, there's two authors, and both of them came on the podcast with me. So I have both of the authors for that book, which that was like, I think it's a bestseller. So that's pretty cool. Like,
wonderful.
So, yeah, I was really excited to have that interview too. So,
okay. Well, if I don't read the book and I listen, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. And you can get a lot from just listening, and that's okay. So, all right. Thanks, Jamie.
Bye.